pistol Winslade had dropped and took pot shots at the monster outside. The gun barely glimmered. "The charge is gone," he said in disgust, tossing it aside. "Winslade died for nothing." Everyone looked depressed and desperate after that. We'd been desperate before, don't get me wrong, but now we were really feeling it.
"What are we gonna do?" Carlos asked. "We can't get out of here. We're rats in a trap."
"Has anyone got something to poison him with?" Kiwi asked suddenly.
We all stared at her for a second.
"I'm fresh out of cyanide," Harris said, "if that's what you mean."
"Cyanide," she said.
Then she got down on her knees and dug in her bag. She produced a cosmetics kit.
"There's cyanide in some cosmetics."
"That's a long shot," I said. "I don't think we're going to kill this thing with mascara."
"Yeah," she said. "He's way too big. How about flammables? Anyone got a lighter?"
No one did. We huddled against the back of the elevator car and sweated. The Jugger, for his part, was out there striding back and forth. Now and then he beat his tail against the door or tried to rip a fresh hunk away from the hole he had made.
"If he got into the other car," I asked, "why doesn't he just rip his way in here?"
"Maybe he's not hungry enough yet," Carlos suggested.
His thought didn't seem to liven the mood any.
"I've got an idea," I said.
"How about batteries? If we can get him to swallow some, he might not like that."
"The batteries in our tappers are small," Kiwi said, "like the size of a thumbnail."
"Yeah, but there's your computer."
"Wait,"
Carlos shouted.
"I know, that laser pistol."
We all looked at it. Kiwi knelt and went to work. She had the battery out and bouncing in her hand a moment later.
"This might work," she said. "There are dangerous chemicals in here, charged or not."
"All right, then. We've got a plan," I said.
"We do?"
asked Carlos.
"Who's going to swallow that battery and then jump into our scaly friend's mouth?"
Looking around the elevator, my eyes landed on Winslade. The others followed me, and Kiwi put her hand to her mouth in revulsion. For a long moment, no one said anything.
"I'll do it," Carlos said seriously, breaking the silence. "I'm the bio, after all."
"I don't want to watch,"
Kiwi said, facing the wall. Carlos knelt, borrowed my razor, and cut a good-sized chunk out of Winslade. It was grisly, but we'd all seen worse. Rolling up the battery and the fresh meat, he handed it to Sargon. Looking disgusted, the veteran nodded.
"I'll deliver it."
He stalked to the elevator door. Tapping lightly on the door with his knuckles, he tried to get the Jugger to show himself.
"Here, kitty," he called.
Nothing happened for a minute or two.
"Come on, Jugger. I got something good for you here. A snack."
"Just throw it outside, Sargon," Kiwi suggested.
"Yeah," he said. "I guess I'll have to."
But then, in the moment of his distraction, the Jugger rammed his head inside again. I'm not sure what went wrong in that moment. Maybe the Jugger had been playing with us. Maybe he had been capable of pushing himself farther into the elevator car than he had been letting on all along. Either that, or the smell of fresh blood so near and enticing had driven him to great efforts. In any case, he lunged, ramming his entire head and one grasping forearm into the car with us. That claw latched onto Sargon's leg and dragged him closer to the snapping jaws. The forearm was scaled and thick. It was as big as a fat man's leg and much stronger. Sargon was a big man, the strongest in the group, but he couldn't resist the tug. The main problem was one of leverage. He didn't have anything to hold on to. The floor of the elevator was like the floor of all elevators, smooth and completely devoid of handholds. Still, Sargon thrashed and flailed. We rushed in, too, trying to help. Kiwi whacked the frigger on the nose with her stunner again. That made him hiss and shake, but he didn't let go of Sargon. For his own part, maybe sensing he was doomed anyway, Sargon timed and tossed his package into the snapping jaws. The Jugger gulped, and the battery went down. That moment of distraction almost fixed everything. Harris and I hooked our hands under one of Sargon's armpits, and we lifted and pulled. Sargon rose up into the air, pulled in two different directions at once like a wishbone.
Sensing he might lose the tug-of-war this time, the Jugger made a final, desperate play. With Sargon's body lifted in the air, he twisted his great head, turned, and took a big bite out of the veteran's guts. That was it. Game over. Sargon died, and the Jugger retreated, enjoying his ill-gotten gains. None of us spoke after that. Kivi had tears in her eyes, but she didn't make a sound.
"How long?"
Harris rasped at last.
"How long until what?"
Carlos asked.
"How long until we're all dead? No fool. How long until that battery eats a hole in his stomach?"
"Oh." Carlos looked thoughtful.
"I remember talk of this in medical school. A poisoning involving a 20-millimeter lithium battery takes about 2 hours to burn through if it lodges in the esophagus. After that, it can burn into the heart or lungs. This battery is way bigger, but it will still take a while. I guess 4 to 10 hours.
Harris stared at him, and sweat ran off his face. He nodded.
"Better than nothing. But I don't think we're going to be alive that long."
I thought it over. I thought hard. This whole thing was pissing me off. I wasn't sure this was a test or an accident or what. No matter what it was, I wasn't enjoying any of it. But most of all, I wanted to win.
"Listen up," I said.
"This dino is dead in time, so the safe play would be to get everyone up that shaft and on top of the elevator. From there, we might be able to wait all day until he dies."
They glanced at the access hatch, and most of them nodded thoughtfully.
"But," I said, "let's think about the other group, those poor Victrix bastards next door. They had a pistol, a better weapon than we had. Does anyone remember what Winslade said? Had they tried to get out of their hatch like we did?"
"Yeah," Kivi said. "I remember. He said the hatch was up on their elevator car before he got there."
"Exactly. And despite all that, they died."
"What's your point, McGill?" Carlos asked. "Because if it's just that we're all as good as dino shit, I'm with you there. But that's not exactly constructive."
"My point is this. Waiting things out isn't going to work. Avoiding conflict isn't going to work. You remember those tests in the mustering hall back in the day? When did passivity ever win an award? Those tests are always rigged. For all we know, that Jugger can blast through our door and eat us any time he wants to. Hiding in here isn't the way to win."
"What then?" Harris asked.
I pointed at the torn-apart hole in the elevator door, and the Jugger beyond that stalked the dark corridors. "That's our goal. We're going to kill that thing. We aren't going to run from him or hide from him. We're going to kill him." All of us slid our eyes toward the dark circle in the center of shredded metal. No one spoke, but we all felt the same urge to violence. He was a predator, but humans were born killers too. More importantly, we were pissed off Varus legionnaires.
Chapter 6.
We took careful stock of our weapons. The collection was pitiful. "One burnt-out laser pistol, no battery," I said. "One razor, but the Jugger didn't seem to care much when I gave him his first shave with it."
"We've got my chain," Harris said, uncoiling the links which wound around his knuckles.
"And my wire,"
Carlos said, stretching it out and letting it snap back. It was housed in a small circular pack that reminded me of a tape measure.
"I still have my wand," Kivi offered, "but the charge is gone."
I nodded, looking at each item in turn. My eyes landed on Carlos's odd weapon. I assume that thing is meant to whip around someone's throat, to garrote them?
"Not just that," he said. "It's an alien-made monofilament. It can saw through steel."
"Really?" I asked. "How long is it, if you pull it all the way out?"
"I don't know. At least 3 meters.
We pulled and pulled. It turned out it was about 4 meters long.
"Careful," Carlos complained. "You'll stretch out the spring inside the housing, and it won't snap back again."
I took it from him, earning myself a frown. I deliberately yanked on it until it came loose from its carrying case. Then I dropped it, and it fell in a tangled mass on the floor. It coiled itself like a snake at our feet.
You friggin' broke it, McGill.
I'll buy you a new one. They watched as I tested it and pulled on it experimentally.
This is it, I said. We can make a noose and set it up like a rabbit snare.
They stared at me without comprehension. I snorted.
A bunch of city rats, I said.
Watch. Making a quick slip knot, I soon had a shining loop of wire with one long end hanging from my upraised hand.
All right, Harris said. But how are we going to get it around that monster's neck?
More importantly, Keevy added, how do we tie it to something? We're in a freaking elevator here.
Looking around at the smooth walls of the elevator, my eyes lit on the hatchway above us.
Up there. It's got to be tied off up there. Hold on, Carlos said, shaking his head. How's this going to work? If that jugger gets far enough into this elevator car to get its head into a loop of wire, he's going to have to be almost completely inside with us.
I eyed the scene, and I nodded. That's right. You got a better idea?
Sadly, no.
We set it up. Keevy went up onto the roof, fumbling around, and then, I'm not exactly sure what caused it, but the jugger went berserk. Was this response due to the creature getting bored, or had he been tipped off somehow that one of his prey was trying to escape again? I recalled that when Winslade had gotten out onto the roof, the jugger had come inside for dinner then, too. Keevy screamed, and I think the rest of us howled with her. The jugger wasn't fooling around any longer. Digging with his massive foreclaws, whipping his head from side to side, he managed to ram his way through the widened hole in the door.
"Tie it off, Keevy!" I shouted. "Tie it off!"
We'd given her a loop of metal to work with, but who knew if the line would be long enough, or if there would be a flange just the right distance from the hatchway to do the job. None of us had ever been up there, except for Winslade and now Keevy. Spreading out, we prepared to die as the jugger forced himself into the elevator car with us. I jumped forward, slashed open his claws, and jumped back. Harris whipped at him with his chain, but neither attack seemed to have any effect. Carlos took charge of the noose. He stuck his head through it, and he waggled his tongue at the jugger. He spat at him, called him names, and gave him a good look at his middle finger. Juggers aren't geniuses, but they aren't animals either. This one knew that he was being mocked. He came through the door in painful surges like a demon being born from a metal womb. Free at last, he stalked forward, darting his head down in one lunging, snapping bite. Carlos, bless his salty heart, offered up his grinning face right on the other side of that big, shining loop of metal. The jugger snapped off his head, and Carlos was dead just like that. Blood gushed, and the jugger looked satisfied as he gulped the head down.
"Give it a yank, Keevy!" I shouted.
She did so, and I saw the noose tighten. Alarmed, the jugger did what all creatures do when caught around the neck. He tried to back out. This only pulled the noose tighter, of course. The damn thing took a long time to die. That's the main thing I remember about the long, long minutes that followed. Panicking and trying to pull away one moment, then lunging forward to kill us in a rage the next, we got a front-row seat. The jugger thrashed and roared. Whenever he got smart and tried to use his stumpy arms to pull away the noose, Harris and I danced in, messing with him, distracting him, making him lunge and snap at us. Each time he did so, of course, the noose tightened. Soon it was cutting into that tough, scaly neck. Blood welled up all around. The monster thrashed and fought hard, but eventually he died. Feeling relieved but a bit sick to our stomachs, we retrieved Keevy by helping her climb down out of the ceiling hatch.
"What do we do now?"
Harris asked me. "We march out of here, proud as punch."
"What if there are more tests?" Keevy asked. "Or more juggers out there, waiting for us in the dark corridors?"
"Then we kill them all," I said confidently. Not waiting for a consensus, I walked out of the ruined elevator door, crawling over the jugger's lengthy tail in order to do so. Standing in the corridor outside, I put my hands on my hips.
"Group 9, reporting," I called out. "We had a little trouble on the way down, but we're ready for that first experiment now."
We waited. Thankfully, they didn't make us wait long. A figure appeared ahead of us and walked up to greet us.
McGill?
Graves asked me.
Where's the rest of your team?
They're taking a nap back in the elevator shaft, sir. They got bored with your little game. He chuckled.
I like your attitude, I always have. I wish I could tell you this is over, Centurion, that you've won the prize. But I don't like to lie.
I said thoughtfully. So that Jugger, he wasn't the reason you came to my place to apologize in advance?
No.
Can I ask them, Primus, what the point of all this is?
You can, but I won't answer. Not unless you win. And for your sake, I hope you don't. The prize sucks.
Confused and glancing at one another, we followed him into the darkened tunnels. We passed a dozen elevators, and we saw at least 20 dead legionnaires. There were plenty more in the corridor to step over to. All of them had been ambushed as we had. In many cases, it appeared that the poor saps had forced open the door early on and gotten themselves slaughtered right off the bat. But among all those dead troops, I only counted a single dead Jugger. Ours. That made me proud, no matter how this bullshit was destined to end. Chapter 7 We followed Graves for what felt like a half mile. The tunnels were dank, dark, and kind of stinky. People don't always smell too good when they were dying in a state of mortal terror, and giant lizards never do. Reaching a station of sorts, we were patted down, sprayed off with cold water from a pressure hose, and then ushered inside. There were grim-faced guards at the entrance.
Hogs? Harris asked. We're being hosed down by hogs after all that? That's an insult.
Hogs were what real legionnaires called hegemony troops. They outnumbered guys like us 50-1, but as they usually stayed on Earth, we didn't have much respect for them. Harris gave the next hog he saw the bird, but I slapped his hand down.
What?
He said, glaring.
Since when do you love the hogs?
I don't, I said. But they're armed, and we aren't right now. This might be another test. Grumbling that I'd changed, Harris shut up and followed me. Every step he glowered at the stained puffcrete floor like a dog on his way to the vets.
Finally, Graves said when we'd made it through the checkpoint. This is the center of our diplomatic operation. Please familiarize yourselves.
Say what?
Harris demanded.
Did I hear you right, Primus? How is this a diplomatic operation? That's what it's called. Really, it's more of a training ground for future diplomats.
Even I had to laugh at that. I can't wait to see the embassy.
Sir? Kiwi asked. Can I ask what planet is going to be receiving this very special team of diplomats you're training here?
Graves looked at her coldly.
No. You can shut up.
He proceeded to show us around the place. It wasn't a huge deal. There were maybe 200 people down here in this dungeon, most of them techs and bios.
Where's the teleport room?
Harris asked. Graves eyed him.
There is none. How are we going to get out there, then, Primus? Out where? To whatever world the diplomats are schmoozing.
Graves blinked.
Ah, you misunderstand. The trials will continue in the morning. These are your quarters. Rest up, and when your teammates come back from the Revival Center, tell them to do the same. The second heat will begin tomorrow, and the VIPs will be watching this time.
Baffled, we were left behind in the passages outside our quarters. The room we'd been assigned to wasn't well appointed. It was about 10 meters square, with uncomfortable beds stacked up along two walls.
Home sweet home,
Harris said, claiming a bottom bunk with a flourish.
McGill?
Kiwi asked me. I turned and I saw an emotional look on her face. Uh-oh, I thought. This was it. Several times in the past, when we'd come under heavy fire on some strange planet, Kiwi had sought solace by sharing my bed. Sure, there wasn't any privacy here, with Harris being no more than a dozen feet off, but that hadn't fazed her in the past. She was a very physical girl. I said.
What's up, Kiwi? Tell me about Carlos. I couldn't see well from up there on top of the elevator car. What did he do to get that jugger into the noose?
Oh, you want to know about that? He shoved his head right in there, teasing that overgrown lizard until he got his head snapped off. She frowned, shaking her head.
A joker to the last, huh?
No, girl, Harris said, his voice rumbling up from his chosen bunk. He was lying on his back, with one arm thrown over his eyes to block out the bluish light in the room. He sacrificed himself to save us all. He got the lizard to charge and shove his big ugly head into that noose. That doomed him.
That's right, I said.
Carlos was the hero in the end.
The hero?
She asked, befuddled. Harris cleared his throat. Now, if you two are going to screw, please do it fast and quiet, like I could really use some sleep. I got a feeling we're not through with our volunteer assignment down here at the south end of hell.
You got it, Harris, I said, and I gave Kiwi a quick up-down of my eyebrows.
What?
She asked, scandalized.
As if!
She stalked away, making poofing sounds. Harris released a rumbling laugh from his bunk.
You're losing your gift, McGill. Either that or the girls are getting smarter.
I frowned, not liking either possibility. But I didn't dwell on it. I headed for the public showers, and I took a long soak in a steamy room. After about 7 minutes in, another figure showed up. I turned with a smile, expecting it to be Kiwi. Maybe she'd changed her mind. But it wasn't her.
Natasha?
I asked in surprise.
You're down here, too?
Yeah. We came in after you guys. We're Group 22.
Did you do it? Did you kill your lizard?
She looked startled.
No. Is that even possible? We ran to the end of the corridor while it chewed on Lofton. Two of us made it to the exit.
The exit? I asked, a frown on my face. There was an exit?
Yeah, of course. Did you miss the whole point of the exercise?
While she asked this, she unceremoniously stripped down and climbed into the stall next to me. The warm water washed off a layer of grime and blood, just as it had for me. I handed her the soap absently.
The exit,
I said thoughtfully. We'd never even considered the option of simply running down the hallway. No wonder we hadn't won outright. Sure, we'd killed our lizard, but that hadn't been the goal of the game. I shook my head, musing. Maybe it was for the best that we'd done it wrong.
Say, Natasha.
Forget it, James. I'm too tired.
Even if you could get me out of here on a lifter tonight, the answer would still be no.
Huh? Oh.
No, nothing like that. I wanted to know what you've learned about this contest. What's this all about?
The answer is still no,
she said guardedly. She didn't even look at me. That made me feel a tiny pang. We'd had a good thing once. Of all the girls I'd shared a bed with, she was one of the sweetest. She'd fallen hard for me long ago, I knew that, and I regretted the fact I hadn't done better by her.
Look, I said, we're both Varys. I'm asking you what the hell is going on. Did you know the Graves actually flew all the way down to Georgia Sector to apologize for volunteering my ass into this thing?
That made her turn and frown at me. She shut off her water, and I tried hard not to look down and watch the last runnels of water roll off her breasts. She hadn't aged a day, but then neither had I. That was probably the only nice side effect of dying all the time.
Are you serious? Graves? Apologizing?
Yeah. He made a big effort to do it, too.
That sounds bad.
Very bad. He's never given a shit about any of us before. What could be so bad that a man with a heart of stone like him would do that?
Can't be that lizard chase. That wasn't any worse than the abuse he gave us as recruits.
Right, I said. That's what I figured.
Could you hand me that towel, James?
What? She sighed,
Stop staring and give me a freaking towel.
Right, sure, sorry. I tossed her a towel and she covered up. I frowned as she did so. First Kiwi, now Natasha. I was striking out 2 for 2. I reassured myself with the facts. I hadn't even been trying. Chapter 8. I took a solid nap, but it didn't last long. A horn blared, blasting us out of our hard bunks. We were all but tossed out onto the cold, unforgiving floor. "Damn," Carlos said, climbing back to his feet in slow motion. Reaching down, I gave him a hand up. "Just got back from the revival chamber?" I asked.
"Yeah, I'm still feeling it."
"Well, that was the first bell. You've got time to shower."
"Okay."
He staggered toward the exit. We all watched him, but only Kiwi moved.
"I need one, too,"
she said, trotting after Carlos. Winsley chuckled. I turned in surprise. His laughter was always kind of nasty-sounding, and today was no exception. "You're back with us, sir?"
"Imagine my joy," he said. "Looks like that bio friend of yours has his squeeze toy back again."
"Sure does," I admitted.
"How does that make you feel, McGill, to get outdone by a pug like him?"
"Pretty good, actually." I proceeded to tell him how the rest of the fight with the Jugger had gone down. Despite himself, Winslade seemed impressed. So did Sargon, who listened in as well.
"So, he teased the lizard's head into the noose?" Sargon said. "That's pretty clean. The kill was his."
"Right," Harris agreed. "McGill came up with the idea of a snare, but Carlos brought that wire to the party, and he teased the Saurian into that fatal charge. He deserves the credit."
"A mutual admiration society?" Winslade asked. "I didn't think Varys Grunts kept score in matters like this."
No one said anything, but we were all thinking the same thing. Winslade had been brass too long, maybe forever. Even before he'd gotten high rank, he'd been a suck-up attaché for high-level officers. For all I knew, he'd never spent a day in the trenches as a plain recruit. Sensing the distance between us all, Winslade threw his legs off the bunk and sucked in a sharp breath through his nostrils. He seemed to regret it immediately.
"What's that stink?" he demanded. "Ah, yes, of course. The goop from the revival machines. All right. As your commander, I'm ordering you all into the showers."
I glanced at him meaningfully and cleared my throat.
"What? Oh.
All right, then, we can give our hero 5 more minutes alone with Kiwi first."
The group waited for the 5, then headed for the showers as a group. As I had already cleaned myself, I lingered behind.
"What about you, sir?" I asked Winslade.
"I took a shower immediately after my revival. I recommend it highly. It's become my habit."
Nodding, I thought hard about how to approach the next subject. It wasn't going to be an easy one.
"Hmm,"
Winslade said. His eyes narrowed, and he regarded me with suspicion.
"I can almost see the large wheels in your head doing a slow revolution every minute or so. What did you want to discuss, Centurion?"
"It's about leadership, sir," I said. "You see, I have it on good authority that we're going to be treated to a series of tests like the one we just went through, in order to do the best we can."
"The answer is no, McGill."
I glanced at him in surprise. Everyone seemed to be saying that to me lately.
"You haven't heard?"
"No. I'm not going to relinquish command. Certainly you've shown yourself a cunning leader. You're a natural alpha dog. But you're still the dog in this pack, if you catch my meaning."
"Sir, I wasn't going to suggest you follow my orders. That would be inappropriate, given our ranks."
"Good. If that's settled, then,"
he said, sliding his butt off his bunk and taking a step or two toward the door. My big arm shot up, barring his path. He looked at it like it was the tail of the Jugger we'd just fought. I dropped my arm immediately.
"Sorry, sir," I said. "What I was trying to say
is perhaps we could adjust our leadership roles for the good of the team. He crossed his arms and looked up at me with surprise and suspicion.
I'm almost amused, he said. Diplomacy? Out of James McGill? It's like watching an ape put on lipstick. Please, by all means, proceed.
As usual, Winslade wasn't making this easy on me. He rarely did. I felt my temper rising, but I controlled myself just barely. What I'm suggesting is that you perform as our liaison. If you could use your silver tongue on the brass, maybe you could gather clues that would help us out. On top of that, you'd be in charge of our overall strategy. For instance, do you realize that in that last room we could have done better? I quickly told him about the true goal of the exercise, to run away.
He said. That was my first instinct, wasn't it?
Exactly so, sir. I tend to get bullheaded in these situations, but in real combat scenarios, I would suggest you use my skills as team leader to execute your orders in the best way possible. Winslade looked thoughtful. His tongue darted out, snaked over his lips, then darted back again. I wanted to laugh at that, but I didn't.
Interesting, he said. I get what you're suggesting. You play the grunt, like a non-com breaking down doors and such like. I, on the other hand, would be in the rear of the formation, making the big decisions.
My best Georgia smile lit my face. That's exactly it, sir. What do you think?
Very well. Centurion McGill, you are in operational command of these petty exercises. I, however, will decide our goal in each instance. To make things clear to the troops, I'll announce my decision, and I'll verbally pass temporary leadership to you for purposes of executing my general orders.
Excellent, Primus. But please make sure the orders are open-ended enough. Give me a little breathing room, sir.
Will do.
And thus was forged a working relationship. I knew everyone else on the team would be happy about it. All of them hated Winslade anyway, and more importantly, they didn't trust him. That sort of disconnect could be deadly in any combat scenario. The next morning at dawn, we reported for duty. By that time, our team felt like a team, not just the faceless Group 9 riding in an elevator and griping. Winslade and I had made our leadership arrangements official, and the group had taken to the idea right away. I reflected that we'd pulled together as a team fast, and that was partly done out of necessity. Even Winslade felt the urgent need to cooperate. The Jugger had given us a taste of what might be coming, and we all knew enough about violent exercises to realize we had to function like a well-oiled machine in order to survive. The morning briefing started out in a deadly silence. Normally, if you put a few hundred legionnaires from a dozen different outfits into one big room, you got a lot of noise. But not today.
Troops,
Imperator Turov said, strutting back and forth at the front of the room.
Welcome to the vaults. Down here we do things we don't discuss anywhere else.
She'd had a little stage built so we could see her clearly, I guess. I found the setup unusual. It was about a meter high, and she was the only thing on it. Essentially, it was impossible for me not to stare at her.
Today, she continued, we're embarked on an unusual bit of diplomacy.
There was that word again, diplomacy. It didn't fit at all in my book. What the hell did giant sauropods, legionnaire grunts, or even that pack of nerds with tablet computers who seemed to be watching our every move from the side of the room have to do with diplomacy? Putting my mind into gear to figure things out, I considered the situation. First off, Turov was a woman to be reckoned with. I could scarcely believe she'd been placed in charge of another major project, as she generally screwed up whatever she touched. The fact she was still in a leadership role was testimony to her connections among the suits on the ruling council. Despite her history, here she was, wearing a skin-tight uniform and boots. Those boots weren't the norm. Once my eyes landed on them, I felt a jolt of suspicion. The boots were black and glossy, and they looked like Legionnaire standard issue, but I could tell right off they weren't regulation. I'd swear to it. They were too high in the heel, that was it. In fact, after I took the whole outfit in, I came to realize she'd snuck lifts in there somehow, and the boots therefore gave her an extra 2 inches of height, if I had to guess. Knowing her, I understood immediately that she wasn't just trying to look taller. Sure, she was a bit on the short side, with matching petite, shapely features all the way around. But what those lifts really did, especially from the perspective of a grunt down low in the crowd, was to raise her butt up and shape it nicely. A distraction? An idle vanity? Who knew and who cared? All of us guys were enjoying the view. Even as I watched her with the rest of them, I felt mildly troubled. Deep down, I just didn't trust Galina Turov. She always had a third angle running that was obscured by the first 2 things you noticed. She was that kind of tricky. "So," she continued, and I made an effort to tune back in,
"Chief Inspector Zlor will be here shortly. I want to make this very clear. I want absolute decorum. I demand it. Any soldier who embarrasses Earth will pay for it dearly. Zlur hasn't graced our planet with his glorious presence in many years, and this time his visit will go perfectly."
Her mention of Zlur shocked me. My eyes jumped right up off her ass as if she'd poked them with twin needles. My gaze met hers, and for an electric moment, I realized she was actually singling me out from the crowd and making eye contact with me. It was quite possible she'd been trying to do that for some time now while I daydreamed examining her shoes and her tail section. After a moment's thought, I figured out why she was trying to get my attention. Galina and I had been involved in a disagreement with Zlur some years ago, right before Legion Varus shipped out to Machine World. That had been a dark and desperate day, even by my standards. The long and the short of it was, Zlur had ended up dead, and we'd ended up swearing each other to secrecy concerning the details. I sensed that Turov was expecting me to do something, to make some kind of response. Possibly, while I'd been distracted, she'd said something important. Without any idea what I was agreeing to, I gave her a small nod. That broke whatever spell she'd been under. She stopped strutting around, and she looked away from me quickly. Her entire demeanor shifted. Turov halted and stood still, assuming a wide military stance. Her hands were clasped behind her back. Her vision swept over the ranks as everyone else reacted to her news, murmuring among themselves about the prospect of having a galactic in the same room with us.
"Zlur is a Mogwa,"
she said after we'd quieted again.
"As you all should know. Remember, our province is only one of thousands in our beloved empire, and no frontier citizen is more interesting than a worm to a Mogwa. Zlur wields total power within the boundaries of Frontier 921. He is, for all intents and purposes, a living god on this green earth."
Our initial shock passed, and the crowd quieted down. Most of us, especially the troops from the respectable outfits like Germanica and the Iron Eagles, now stood at sharp attention. The Germanic pukes in particular were as stiff as boards, and their eyes were wide in alarm. Almost no one wanted to screw up in front of a real live Mogwa. Naturally, there were exceptions to this general response. Pretty much all the dissenters were among my own teammates. We'd met more than our share of galactics over the years, and we weren't overawed by them. Peavy crossed her arms and looked down. Carlos shook his head and kicked at the floor with the toe of his boot. Sargon, taking the part of veteran seriously, used his own boot to wake Carlos up. With a hiss and a curse, Carlos straightened. Peavy did the same before she caught a boot in the butt as well.
"Well done, veteran," Harris murmured.
Sargon said nothing, but I could tell the phrase made him proud. Harris had been our veteran for many years, and had only been moved up into the officer ranks recently.
"Good,"
Turov said, eyeing the crowd and apparently liking what she saw.
"I can see you understand the importance of this day. Chief Inspector Zlur will operate as one of the judges of this contest. He will not vote, but he will be watching with keen interest."
I glanced at Winslade, hoping he had some insight into what kind of contest we could expect. More lizards? Noticing my scrutiny, Winslade merely widened his eyes and fractionally shrugged his shoulders in response. Apparently he didn't know what we had in store for us either. On the other hand, he could be faking it. He just couldn't tell with Winslade. He was as slippery as a snake oil salad.
"Let's get down to it. The results of the first day's contest were inconclusive. The best teams, Group 4 and Group 21, suffered only a single loss each."
At the mention of their numbers, one pack from Germanica and another from the Iron Eagles cheered. That made me frown a bit. Sure, Group 9 had lost half our people, but we'd killed our lizard. That ought to count for an extra death or two.
"Due to this lack of a clear winner, we've decided to eliminate half the contestants due to their incompetence. Every group that had no or only one survivor is hereby dismissed. I thank you for your service."
Up and down the lines there was a shuffling. About 10 groups walked away shaking their heads. Some cursed, some cheered weakly. The other groups grinned at them and flashed eyebrows. This was met with angry words, and in a single case, a fist was thrown. It came as no surprise to anyone that the belligerent soldier was from Solstice. They had a rep that was almost as bad as Legion Varus. In fact, it occurred to me, as the unruly Solstice veteran was thrown out of the room, that if one of our Varus groups had been kicked out and sneered at, there would have been more punches thrown, maybe a lot of them. Turov watched this display sourly.
"There. You see that? That demonstrates the lack of discipline that probably caused them to die like rats in the first place. Don't allow them to trouble your thoughts again. You're better than them, all of you."
A ragged cheer went up, although the remaining half was beginning to wonder what they'd won through their success. Carlos wasn't under any illusions.
"I screwed us," he said in a low tone. "I'm sorry, guys. I think I should have let that lizard eat us all, like so much ground-up cat food."
No one said anything, but I couldn't help but wonder if he would prove to be right in the end. Turov smiled and slammed her small hands together, making a popping sound.
"Congratulations, winners. You will go on. You will be outfitted and prepped, and you will prove yourselves again. Remember, Zlur will be watching."
Again the ragged cheer broke out. It was far from full-throated, however. Turov cleared off the stage, and the wall behind her yawned open. After a moment it became clear it was a smart wall, one that could be reconfigured to the dimensions and shape required.
"Up!" Graves shouted from behind us. "Up on that stage! Advance, take a weapon, and move into the pits."
The pits? We turned away from him, back toward the stage. We could see now that the area behind it was quite large. A series of depressions were visible when we climbed onto the raised area and advanced. Between us and these pits were racks of weapons. They were all basic in nature. Knives, spears, swords, and a few throwing axes.
"Whoa," Carlos said. "This is gonna suck more than I thought."
Sargon ignored him and vaulted on to the raised area. I understood the whole staging thing better now. It had never been a stage. In order to create pits, they'd been forced to raise the floor. At the bottom of the vault was pure puffcrete, one of the hardest substances known to man. Sargon wasn't fooling around. He rushed the racks and grabbed for a spear. I happened to know from past experiences that he was a gifted man with a spear. He could throw one like he was born to it. But unfortunately, he wasn't alone. Another big fellow with hair braided tightly against his head had rushed for the weapon racks as well. Both of them apparently were interested in the spear, valuing its reach. The second man was from Germanica. He tried to snatch the spear away from Sargon.
"Hold on," I shouted, running up to them. "Hold on now." "We haven't gotten instructions yet," Harris called out. He was right behind me.
Sargon and the other man eyed one another in cold anger. Then suddenly Sargon shrugged and gave him a smile. His grip loosened, and the Germanica asshole yanked the spear away.
"This will end up in your guts, Varys," he shouted, laughing.
Happy, the Germanica man turned away and walked with an exaggerated swagger toward his team, who hooted at us. He shook the spear overhead like a trophy. In his last moments, he opened his big mouth again, no doubt intending to hurl a fresh insult toward my people, but he never got the chance. Sargon had grabbed up an axe. Without hesitation, with an even stride, he walked up behind the Germanica man and split his skull right down the middle. The sound was like that of a melon striking a sidewalk. Blood exploded, but Sargon snatched up the fallen spear from dead fingers with a wide grin. He even waved it at the dead man's friends.
"Oh, Jesus," Harris began. "Damn it, Sargon!"
The Germanica people lost it. They snatched up weapons from the racks, shouting with rage. I sensed things were getting out of hand early, so I took up the axe Sargon had discarded. After all, it had been pretty effective. Chapter 9
"Die, Varys!"
the Germanica people roared as one.
"Halt!"
boomed a deafening voice, amplified by a throat mic from the end of the stage. It was a narrow thing, but we did all pause, snarling at one another. Tribune Deitch approached at a leisurely pace. She looked at the dead man and put her hands on her wide hips.
"This is a violation of the rules," she said. "No one is supposed to strike until you're in your assigned pits and given the go-ahead."
"No one told us that," I said. "My man was challenged and he took action."
"McGill,"
Deitch said, recognizing me and looking me over.
"Your team is off the rails already, huh? Why am I not surprised?"
"Can you tell us the rules, sir? We obviously don't know them."
"All right, it's pretty simple. We're placing two teams in every pit for 2 minutes. Whichever group defeats the enemy and crawls out with the most members standing wins. You broke those rules, so you lose by default."
The Germanica group hooted and laughed.
"But no one told us anything," I said again, stubbornly.
"That's true," Deitch said thoughtfully. "Imperator Turov was supposed to do it, but she seems distracted today. 2 more damned sentences added to her speech would have done it."
"Tribune Deitch,"
another voice called out, and a tall figure approached.
"Perhaps I can be of some assistance with your animals."
We all looked up. It was none other than Tribune Maurice Armel. He had a French accent, a wispy mustache riding above a set of sneering lips, and most importantly, he was the leader of Legion Germanica.
"Maurice," Deitch said, "I'd welcome your input."
"The rules are the rules," he said. "I know such cold logic hurts, especially when it's applied to a group of feral, emotion-driven creatures such as yours. But there it is."
Deitch looked annoyed, but I was worried. She was, at the bottom of her heart, a woman who believed in law and order. Quite possibly, she was the straightest arrow in Legion Varys. Maybe that's why they'd made her our overall commander. A faint smile played over Armel's face now. He knew Deitch well. We knew our tribune was a sucker for an argument like that, one that appealed to the strict letter of the law. "We can fix it," I said loudly. "I'll give up Sargon. He'll step aside. He's our best man in a pit fight. That way it will be 5-on-5 from the start." Armel made a big show of considering my proposal carefully. He squinted and he rubbed at his swarthy chin. But at last he ended this act with a regretful shake of his head.
"I'm afraid not," he said. "You've clearly planned this whole thing out. Legion Varus is infamous for such trickery, such foul deceit. I wouldn't even be surprised to learn."
"How in the hell could we plan something?" I demanded, losing my temper at last. "We didn't even know what the rules were until—"
"McGill," Tribune Deitch said in a commanding voice, "stand down."
I shut up. I had some respect for Deitch, even though we didn't always see eye to eye.
"We'll forfeit this round," Deitch said. "It's unfortunate, but I don't see any other way to solve this, and we need to move ahead."
"Very, very gracious of you, Tribune," Armel said. "In fact, if you'd enjoy having a drink together while we observe the rest of this glorious contest, I'd like to invite you—"
"Don't worry about it, McGill,"
Winslet said loudly, turning his back on the two tribunes and the grinning Germanica assholes. He patted me on the shoulder.
"They got lucky, and they know it. We would have torn them apart."
"What?" Armel said, narrowing his eyes and turning his head to follow us.
"What was it one of your apes said, Deitch?"
Winslade gave me a subtle wink. Instantly I got the message. Damn, I thought, I should have come up with it myself. "There's no shame in it," I said loudly, turning back to face them. "Everyone has to know when to fight and when to run. There's no shame in that at all, Tribune." Armel was stock still, his gaze burning in my direction. I could tell he was at war internally. It was entertaining to try and guess which side of him was going to win out, his brain or his sense of pride.
"You would dare call a Germanica team cowards?"
he asked. "Well, now," I said, crossing my arms. "You're the one who came up with that word, not us. You must have thought it up all by yourself. But now that you've put it out there, this whole thing does seem fishy. Could it be that Germanica was the one doing the scheming here? Seriously, Tribune, all this just to get out of a fair fight?" Behind my back, my team had gathered. We were solid now, I realized. We weren't catcalling and making obscene gestures, but we were grinning smugly.
"No one will say such a thing," Armel announced. "No Varus trash will ever dare to claim a Germanica man piddled himself in fear. I hereby accept your offer. You have only to ban this shaved ape named Sargon from the pit, and my team will defeat yours honorably."
"Done," Tribune Deitch said. "Pair off against your opposing groups, everyone. This contest will last for 2 minutes. The team with the best combination score, based on kills and men left standing, will win."
A murmur swept the crowd, punctuated by a few energetic whoops and threats.
"To kick off the event," Deitch continued, "I'm going to count down slowly from 10. When I get to 1, everyone will have a single second to get your ass into that pit and start fighting. Good luck and do your best."
A roar went up from the assembled teams. We'd been readying ourselves mentally and physically all this time, stretching, gripping our weapons, and rubbing talc into our sweating palms.
10!
Shouted Deitch. Pounding feet sounded all over the raised stage. Groups assembled on opposite sides of each pit. Our mouths opened of their own accords. Our lungs sucked in air, and we let it hiss back out through our teeth.
9!
I felt my heart pound, and I waved my axe overhead in challenge to Germanica. They snarled in return. We were ready.
8!
Out of the far end of the chamber, a sound distracted us. A section of the smart wall began to peel away. Behind this was what amounted to rows of seats and cordoned-off areas. A throng of onlookers sat there, perched on what looked like cushy chairs,
"What the fuck?"
Harris asked next to me, and I seconded the emotion. We had spectators?
7! Hey,
Keevy said, pointing into the stands.
Look up there. Isn't that Zlura himself?
It was indeed the chief inspector. Physically, the Magua was a spidery alien with a central thorax of waxy black. Zlura's 6 limbs operated as either arms or legs. Each of his terminating hands, or feet, could be used to manipulate objects.
6!
Deitch boomed.
McGill, Carlos said at my side, I want you to know how uncool this whole thing is.
5!
What? I asked, turning to him in confusion.
You could have let it go, man. You could have let us forfeit out, and we'd be done with this shit. But no, you just had to...
4!
Carlos,
I interrupted.
You look across that pit.
Reluctantly, he did so.
3!
You really wanted me to let Armel humiliate us? Really? Then you can stay out of this.
What?
2!
You heard me. Stay out of the pit. You stand up here and save your skin. Why don't you piss yourself, too, while you're at it?
1!
Deitch roared at last, and a huge cry rolled up from the fighters. Even the audience of high-ranking officers joined in. I threw myself into the pit, and my eager gang followed. Even Winslade jumped in without hesitation. Winslade's example might have shamed Carlos. He hopped in after us, screaming out a single word.
Varus!
Chapter 10 I was angry. I don't mind admitting it. Sure, that's not the best state of mind to be in at the start of a serious fight, but it's not the worst either. As an opener, I took a chance. Sometimes that's what a leader has to do, get things started. Cocking back my arm, I gripped Sargon's axe and heaved it into the thick of the enemy. The pit itself was about 10 meters across, if I had to guess. That might sound like plenty of room, but it isn't. There were 10 of us inside that limited space, and it felt like we were 10 mice trapped in a shoebox. With only a split second to dodge, the lead man in the approaching group managed it, but the guy hiding behind him didn't. I nailed him full in the chest. The axe chopped right through his breastbone and kept going. Damn, that thing was sharp. It must have a monofilament blade on the head. Whatever the stage surrounding our pit was made of, it must have been something porous, because the axe thunked into it and pinned the squirming, dying legionnaire there. Now, with only 4 souls left to face 5, Germanica's team didn't look so smug. Of course, I'd managed to disarm myself, so I fell back, letting my team wrap around me and move forward. Harris had chosen a long knife from the racks. There was no surprise in that. He was an expert with that particular weapon. He took the point position of our group without being ordered to, and he did so with relish. Unfortunately, he was faced by a man with a sword, a rapier. Harris tried to get in close, but the enemy was a wiry fellow, quick on his feet. He seemed to know what he was doing with that long blade, and he stopped thrust Harris and hurt him bad. I dared to turn my head, looking from side to side at the rest of this mess of a fight. Winslade and Carlos were both sparring with their opponents, tapping weapons and making fake jabs, without going for the kill. At the center of the ring, Keevy was standing behind Harris. I could tell she was looking for an opening. The swordsman struck again, and he ran Harris clean through. Keevy saw her chance. She darted in while Harris had the swordsman's weapon bound up with his ribs, and she clocked the man on the left knee with a weighted club. He went down, howling. That might have meant a victory for us, but Harris began convulsing. He died on the wood chips, littering the floor of the pit. I tried to dash in and snatch up Harris's fallen knife, but these Germanic friggers were on top of their game. I got my hand pinned down by some kind of forked stick. Damn, that hurt. But the tines of the big fork didn't penetrate the puffcrete under the wood chips. I was able to rip my hand loose and send the owner sprawling on top of Harris. It was a woman, and she hadn't been prepared for the strength of my yanking motion. I could move again, but my right hand was a wreck. I held it up against my body, kind of curled, dangling, and bleeding at the same time. I figured the tendons were gone. Seeing a shot of glory, the girl grinned and pulled back for another savage thrust with her trident thing. Backpedaling wasn't going to cut it because the rim of the pit was only a few feet behind me. I dodged, but I could see right off that wasn't going to work either. She meant to plant.